Good evening, listeners, to the Little Saigon Report. It is December the 11th, 2019. That's 12/11/2019, and it's almost 10 p.m. for those of us living in the Pacific time zone. For those of us living in the Pacific time zone, it's almost 10 p.m. Our reality is broken. It's Wednesday, December the 11th, 2019, as I drink my water to hydrate my bowel case. Consume the vegetables of the earth, people. Consume the green vegetables while they are fresh. Make yourself safe. Make yourself a salad. Almost had a stroke there. Make yourself a salad of tomatoes and lettuce. Maybe that iceberg lettuce, you fuck. Get yourself some crumbles of blue cheese. Yeah, that's the kind of artisanal bullshit that some preppy freak would do back in 1984. Get some fucking crumbled fucking blue cheese for your penny loafers, you fuck. If you ever had penny loafers and you put a penny in them, yeah, you're a fuck. Anyways, I think I might have had penny loafers a long time ago, as the case may be, in the 1980s. That was the thing, penny loafers. I think people still wear them today, old people. Old people waiting to die. Put a little penny in the loafer. Put a little penny in the loafer for you. Here's a penny to take me across the river Styx. Anyways, I don't think young people wear penny loafers any longer. I think they wear other types of fucking shoes, whatever the fucking system tells them through their fucking glowing rectangle. What did the glowing rectangle tell you to believe today, you fuck? Did it tell you that Donald Trump is evil? Did it tell you that Donald Trump is good? Did it tell you about a restaurant just off of 13th Avenue where the food is okay? What did your glowing rectangle tell you today? Told you some kind of bullshit, didn't it? Might have told you about some new stock to invest in. Wouldn't that be nice? Did your glowing rectangle give you reasons why it's okay for us to steal oil from people in the Middle East? What did your glowing rectangle tell you to do today? What did your glowing rectangle tell you to think today? You should just do what I do. drink today. Why did you drink today? Because I was celebrating Wednesday, December the 11th, 2019. Who the fuck thought we'd make it this far? Not Guy McPherson. Well, actually, we're still in his death window. I don't even want to mention him because a lot of you folks end up on my little island of regret. And you're hopeful that maybe I'll say something nice or not say anything at all. But what if, in fact, there are worse islands than even Uncle Dan's crazy fuck-fuck island? What if there are islands of beasts with three horns and seven eyes? What if there is an island not just of Dr. Moreau, but Dr. Grey Poupon? Can you imagine the island of Dr. Grey Poupon? It would look a lot like the BB series The Prisoner from the 1960s, asshole. The island of Grey Poupon, people just ride around in fancy pants cars asking each other, "Hey, pardon me, buddy. Do you have any Grey Poupon?" How poignant is that bullshit? Anyways, I have a basic theory that is going to guide a fair amount of this podcast, and it is the following theory. If your first name is Zoltan, and it was your given name given by your parents at birth, if your first name is Zoltan and you also happen to be Hungarian, son of a bitch, if your first name is Zoltan, you are likely in contact with the ancient spirits of those places that know how to read the market. So yeah, anyways, my basic theory is this. If your first name is Zoltan, you didn't change it, it was given to you, and you're Hungarian. I'm trying to scratch my back right now, separate topic. I wish I had like a metal scratching poker. Instead, I'm going to use this Bambuscure. You know what's funny though? Uncle Dan has uses for all kinds of dangerous objects. These Bambuscure, believe it or not, if you're a prepper, side topic before we talk about Zoltan, if you're a prepper and you don't know about bamboo skewers, you really need to research these things because in my opinion, you could buy a shitload of these things and if you're all halfway crafty, you could build yourself a pretty nifty little handheld crossbow that shoots bamboo skewers. Not to mention the fact that they are ready-made punji sticks. Oh yeah, you can poop on them, you can pee on them, you can dig a hole, put them in the hole, cover the hole with grass, you know, as an obstacle for people to get through if they want to get to your place and your shit. Yeah, so anyways, I'm using it right now to scratch my back. Now, if I had an accidental reflex, it would drive through my spine. But that's okay, because on a little Saigon report, we make do. You know, the first rule of medical care, according to Dr. Grunkus, the first rule of any proper medical care for a human being that wants to live real, Dr. Grunkus says the first rule is there's lots of stuff around the house that can help you. And there's some things that can probably hurt you. So Dr. Grunkus says, if you find yourself feeling sick, don't worry too much about it. I'm going to stop right there. Anyways, if your first name is Zoltan, and it was given to you by your parents, like your parents literally said, in memory of old Grandpa Zoltan, we're going to name you Zoltan, then you, yeah, that's a reason to listen to you. It sounds superstitious, and it is totally irrational, but it is a heuristic of mine. I had an advisor in graduate school. Full disclosure, I am not currently paying my student loans, and if the reality is they repossess your degrees if you don't pay your student loans, then I may in fact have no degrees at this point. Like, it's funny, if you actually don't pay your student loans, they'll actually block transcripts now. I tried to get some transcripts for a background check, separate topic, so I could start working, so maybe I could pay my student loans, crazy theory. And yeah, they blocked my fucking transcripts. A good example of how when you're stuck in the debt hole, it's hard to dig your way out of that debt hole with more debt, And if you can't make money, where's the money going to come from? Because the Fed can make money. Related to the topic in a roundabout kind of circular fucking non-tangential sort of fucking way. There is a analyst by the name of Zoltan Pozsar. And God, I hope I'm saying that right. Pozsar. I was going to say Pozsar because, anyways, before I go there, I had a advisor in graduate school when I was studying history. In grad school, I studied Russian history, mainly 20th century Russian history. Please don't quiz me on it because I haven't given a shit about the 20th century or 20th century Russian history in a long time. I've got nothing against the Russian people. It's not about that. I've just been in a different fucking world. When I got that stupid degree back in the 90s, I truly thought I was going to be in military intelligence and stay in the military for my whole fucking life. That was the vision I had of myself. I would get my PhD one day, which I do not have. All I have is a shitty master's degree. That is all boilerplate to explain that I'm not pretending to be Mr. Fancy Pants right now. Okay? This is not, oh, listen to me. I went to graduate school and studied the ball hairs on my nutsack. I went to graduate school and I studied Soviet history. Oh, I studied the Eastern Front in the Second World War. I studied Operation Barbarossa and Operation Citadel and Saturn. That's related to the counteroffensive at Stalingrad. Yeah, I studied all that fucking bullshit, people. Anyways, I'm going off topic again. But the point is, I had an advisor, and he was pretty fucking cool, Dr. Zoltan Kramar. I don't know if he's still alive. In all likelihood, I don't think he could be. But then again, his first name is Zoltan. So is he the kind of person that might have survived to see 100 years of age or something? Yeah, maybe. He'd be about 90 years old now, I think. You know, roughly speaking. Almost 100. But he might still be alive. You never know. He was a professor at Central Washington University. That's where I went to ROTC a long time ago when I believed in the crocodile and when I did the crocodile rock. I even took my oath there in 96, an oath to protect and defend the blah, blah, blah of the giant crocodile who's making fun of us right now. I did that. Anyways, his name was Zoltan. I think he met his wife during the Hungarian Revolution. He told me a story of seeing Hitler when he was a kid. When he was a little kid, he saw Hitler give a speech, and he described it. It was really funny because he went into the theatrics of it. Like, as a kid, he was very curious, and he said the speech was interesting, but there was all this theatrics. Like, they literally put Hitler on this kind of, like, track so that, you know, there'd be smoke, and he would suddenly appear. They did that on purpose, so I did not know this. Probably back in the late 20s and early 30s, before, you know, the Nazis took power, sometime after he was released from jail for that little beer hall revolution, you know, not the first German to get drunk and start some shit, if you ask me. Anyways, although he was Austrian, right? Let's not go, well, that's really just southern Germany. The Österreich. Anyways, it's just Germany. Fucking Germans. Needless to say, good old Zoltan. Yeah, he was a really smart guy. I was probably a terribly shitty, mediocre graduate student, but he was not mediocre. I hope he's still alive. I hope he's healthy and happy. He told me some things back then. Like, one thing he said, he did not believe societies could function, like governments and societies could function above 250,000 people. He thought 250,000 people was more or less the magic number, which means that if you have a country that is more than a city, and if your city is bigger than 250,000 people, or one or the other, it's probably not going to function. He really believed in this idea of small-scale government, and I gotta say, at the time, I was sympathetic because I would say, I'm a small government Republican. Oh my God, I vomit when I think about the stupid ideas I believed in my 20s. Please forgive me. But you just believe shit because everyone believes it. It makes fucking sense. Oh, there's a small government Republican. Yeah, if there is one, if there's a small government Republican, It is a tiny little creature living someplace in a cave in the deepest, darkest parts of the Amazon jungle, and it is nearly extinct. Because these things do not exist. So if there is such a thing as a George F. Will libertarian small government Republican, I love watching This Week with David Brinkley with my pa and then seeing the fucking, you know, Monsanto commercials or how, you know, Archer Daniels Midland Company saves the world. How the, you know, it's funny when I was a kid, I didn't realize this, but yeah. ADM is what you eat for dinner. I don't even know if they're still alive. But point is, folks, Zoltan. If you've got a name like Zoltan, I think it's, you know what? I'm going to go on a limb here. If you run into anyone who is naturally named Zoltan, I mean at birth, I don't mean people change their name to Zoltan because they think it's fucking cool, okay? Frankly, I think a wizard is named Zoltan. And a wizard is named Zoltan at birth, and probably in the darkness of night, and probably underneath a moon, a blood moon, and probably with laser beam cannons and angels with fire wings, and probably even demons driving firebirds. That's a Pontiac Firebird with a nice big Chevy 350 in it. I think you could get it like that. Maybe you got a little bit of a blower on the top, you know, to increase the airflow. Maybe you got nitrous button right next to the fucking key. Anyways. Zoltan Poser. Pozar, excuse me. God, I said it again. Poser. That is terrible. Zoltan Pozar is basically an expert. Let me describe the guy. And this is as of 2019, so I don't know if this bio is still correct. Zoltan Pozar, Managing Director, Investment Strategy and Research, Credit Suisse. Zoltan Pozar is a Managing Director in Investment Strategy and Research Department and is based in New York. Prior to joining Credit Suisse in February 2015, Zoltan was a Senior Advisor to the blah, blah, blah. Listen, this guy's worked in deep state banking for a long time. He's an expert in shadow banking, which I think refers to all of what you would call the almost off-books banking. What does almost off-books banking mean? Well, it means the types of transactions that are not necessarily tracked by the Federal Reserve. So these are, you know, these are what you would call friendship transactions. Believe it or not, the Chinese banking system currently has a lot of off-the-books banking, okay? Banking done on the side, on the sly. So there isn't, that's one of the things, when people look at the financial crisis that exists in China right now, they're not quite understanding that it's not just that the government is lying, everybody's lying, all the way up and down the chain. If you think the Chinese financial system is based on truth and transparency, wow. I have a ghost city in Shenzhen to sell you, buddy. I'll sell you the whole ghost city. I'll sell it to you for about $55,000. Of course, taking ownership of that thing will be dangerous. And also, did I tell you, the walls are 50% asbestos. Asbestos waste. Yeah, Zoltan Pozar. He is a person, I think, worthy to listen to. So Zoltan thinks that the repo situation in the financial markets is a problem. Now, let me explain my definition of the repo market. It is a relatively short-term financing market open to banks and lenders. So you could think of it as the lender to lenders. And in that sense, you know, you could make an analogy to a fluid. A greasy fluid, you keep the engines of the economy greasy, you allow for transactions to complete, you know, no one ever has all the money, right? It's kind of like, you have to understand, for these guys right now, the repo situation is a lot like that scene from It's a Wonderful Life. And basically, this is how Jimmy Stewart would explain it. You know, Bank of America or Deutsche Bank, their money is not, you know, in the fucking vault. It's in credit cards. It's in mortgage-backed securities, you fuck. It's in little Jimmy's surgery so he can have a third eye. It's everywhere. It's in that new plant that's going to be creating all kinds of shit we don't need, but definitely killing the salmon. It's everywhere, man. It's in the salmon because, hey, the money pays for the Prozac and the Prozac's in the salmon. Yeah. It's really demented, but the fact is, what their claim would be is every debt they hold, everyone else's liability is their asset. That's essentially the banking system in a nutshell. If you want to understand the banking system as it currently exists, everyone else's liability can be thought of as an asset to a bank. And here's the problem. Even these banks run low on cash, so they need something like an American Express card. And if you want to think of the repo market's kind of like a credit card or American Express card. The banks are not supposed to use this for long-term funding. It's only for short-term funding gaps. Because, hey, the money is not at the bank. It's in little Jimmy's surgery to become a transgender dolphin. It's in some type of new app they're going to build at Facebook to monitor your pubic hairs. The money's all over the place. The money's in a new algorithm project at Goldman Sachs to read the stock market 17 minutes before it occurs. It's called a time radio. Yeah, anyways, the money is all over the place. So they get short. These banks get short on cash, and they still have to conduct business. And what do I mean by business? Business is things like intra and interstate commerce. Now, what do I mean by that? Interstate meaning within the United States. Like, there's commerce. People need to conduct business. If a truck shows up delivering food to a grocery store, the trucker needs to get paid, the delivery company needs to get paid, the fucking provider of those groceries, the supplier, needs to get paid. Okay? So all that has to happen. And that's, and our economy is very tight, folks. You know, people, I've mentioned this in the past, just-in-time logistics. Well, just-in-time logistics has two sides to it. Because things are just in time, you don't have a lot of quantity on hand. In a lot of ways, the current financial system is also just in time. There isn't like a lot of extra cash out there. In fact, it's been pointed out that if you think of cash in traditional ways, the velocity of money itself for normal transactions at this point is really kind of in a bad place. So there's really not a lot of ordinary everyday cash available. It's one of the reasons why you can't just go to the bank and get thousands of dollars out of your account. They'll give it to you slowly over time. Now you could say, well, Dan, that's not really a capital control. They did that after 9/11 because the terrorists were using banks. Well, you know what? The terrorists also drink water. And the terrorists drink milk. And if you believe their terrorist story, then anything the terrorists did that, you know, to enable them, like, I don't know, maybe even snorting a little coke, but there's already a war on coke, so we don't need that, do we? Yeah. Zoltan Pozsar is basically saying that this credit card, you know, I'm calling it a credit card, the repo market, that's available to the banks is signaling some things that are not so great. In fact, he thinks that it's signaling that the financial system is about to freeze up. Because here's the thing, folks, because that money isn't really in the bank, because banks think of liabilities as assets, you're really talking about giant black holes. Most banks are just these giant black holes. And you could argue, well, wait a minute. Doesn't this black hole have a beautiful planet in its orbit? Well, that's true. So you could argue that it's a black hole with some assets surrounding it. And it can suck in those assets. But the question you have to ask yourself is, given the state of the banks today and the world, given the derivatives overhang, after you suck in all those assets, do you still have a black hole? And the answer is, yeah, you do. And there's no pretty solution to this. Anyways, according to Zoltan, who I think we should listen to, not just because of his first name, although I think that's cool. According to Zoltan, because there's this huge demand for short-term liquidity right now, and because the repo rates, because again, even the short-term stuff, it's kind of like your credit card, folks. Those issuers of money within the repo market, they need to get paid. They're going to get paid. You're not going to fucking stiff them. So at the end of the day, even though this is a funding vehicle that seems like free money, it's really not technically free money. Let me read an article from Zero Hedge, and then we can talk further. Okay, people. This article appeared today at approximately 1:20 p.m., probably Eastern Standard Time. This article is titled, "Is Zoltan's Market Doomsday Imminent? Here are the two things to watch." Okay, now Zero Hedge has been publishing articles related to Zoltan Pozsar's predictions. God, I hope I'm saying his last name right. He'll probably say, "Hey, you're butchering my name." Okay, Hungarian wizard. Anyways, Zero Hedge has been publishing articles related to the repo market, which also, if you don't know what repo means, it means repurchase agreement. Essentially, it's an agreement to buy something I sold you at some point in the future. Honestly, folks, it sounds like financial chicanery. The bottom line is this: the repo market enables liquidity for banks. And without the liquidity, food does not get delivered, okay? That, if you want to think of it in simple terms, the food at the grocery store that you need to eat, and it's not just the food, it's everything. But I'm going to focus on the food here. The food you need to eat, the food you're going to go buy, the food for Christmas, if liquidity freezes up, companies that do transport, delivery, providers, the entire supply chain freezes up. That's just reality. You know, as fucked up as the pirate ship Death Star is in America, it still is kind of a free market, kind of. And where it's a free market still kind of is people expect to get paid. No one is going to deliver 50,000 tomatoes for nothing. So yeah, you're going to, yeah, if you have a financial seizure, or stroke or financial crisis like the one we had in 2008, it can ultimately mean, and this is where the liars are telling truth, it can ultimately mean a lot of chaos, folks. A lot of chaos. Best case scenario, you're talking bank holidays, which means banks will be shut down. You're talking maybe even a reissuing of U.S. currency. Like, it could be a case of where the Treasury takes control and the Federal Reserve goes bye-bye. I have no idea what's going to happen, folks, but this next crisis isn't a debt crisis. This is a currency crisis, which you could say the next crisis is the next leg up, and it's not linear. So all that funky bullshit we did to buy us 10 years of more bullshit, to do the shit that the same banks say we shouldn't do, and that is cook the planet. Isn't it funny that the same fucking corporate overlords that tell us we're cooking the planet give us lots of free money to cook the planet? That seems kind of fucking stupid. Doesn't it? Kind of seems stupid. Well, we gotta stop all the fucking human bullshit. Here's a loan to do more human bullshit and have more human babies to buy human bullshit. That's how the banks work, so explain that one to me, motherfucker. That does not imply there's no crisis. I'm just saying if there is one, their angle is to fuck you. If a corporate overlord is telling you there's a crisis and it's real, their only angle is to fuck you. That's it. It's not to help. Anyways, way off topic, the title of the article is Zoltan's Market Doomsday Imminent. Here are the two things to watch. And this was published again today around 1 p.m. In the aftermath of Zoltan Pozsar's stunning doomsday report about an upcoming crisis in the repo market, which we discussed extensively yesterday, and which predicted that the Fed may lose control of overnight rates, leading to a vicious dislocation in repos coupled with a paralysis in the FX swap market. Many traders who pretend to understand the implications of what the former Fed strategist said have quietly hunkered down and are looking carefully for signs that Pozsar is correct. A worst-case scenario that could then lead to a spike in Treasury yields, a forced deleveraging of hedge funds, and a plunge in equities. In short, a stock market apocalypse. But what are the signs that Pozsar is looking at? To determine that a liquidity crunch is imminent, there are two key leading indicators that serve as an advance warning that all hell may be about to break loose. Now, I'm going to go through these two indicators and let you read the rest of the article on your own. The two basic indicators, according to Pozsar, are the following. Number one, the repo rates, okay, the actual repo rates themselves. And again, this is also related to that idea of overnight rates. But the repo rates themselves, as they spike, that's a signal you're in a bad place because nobody wants to give you any type of short-term liquidity That's what that means. It's like you're saying, credit card company, I promise I'll get a job next month. And they're saying to you, listen, you already owe us 30 grand and you want 30 grand more? Fuck you, but hey, I'll loan it to you at 10%. But wait a minute, last week it was 2%. Yeah, this week it's 10. Now, of course, I'm just using this as an example, but one of these factors or signs is that repo rate itself. And the repo rate is starting to spike. The other sign is in the foreign exchange swaps market, that essentially there is not the cash to supply dollars to other banks. Now you say to yourself, well, why is that important? Okay, one of the controversial subjects coming out of the great financial crisis was all the Fed money that went to banks overseas, because that did happen, folks. If you think that when the Fed helped us, they only helped Americans, oh my God, you're so fucking clueless. They helped every fucking bank in the world. They pretty much enabled, in many ways, what has been referred to as the great commodity boom of 2012 to 2016, or maybe 2010 to 2016, that occurred in Asia, specifically in China, the great commodity boom, the great building boom. Many a ghost city was built in the early part of this decade using that money. Anyways, quantitative easing continued this, but there was ultimately a toxic asset release program, TARP 1, TARP 2. There were a lot of shady financial activities that occurred in 2008 and 2009, and a lot of this was to make sure that dollars would be available overseas. Now, folks, you need to understand something. If you're going to be the petrodollar king, and currently we think of ourselves as the petrodollar king, you better have dollars available to the foreigners that are going to want to buy oil. Because if there are no dollars available, guess what? They will not be using your money to buy that oil. Now, folks, if you're asking yourself, how quickly could the petrodollar implode? Well, here's the deal. How quickly can you go broke? How quickly can you get into a car accident? Listen, you're driving down the road one day and everything's fucking fine. And you're a good driver. The insurance company says you're a good driver. The problem is, though, is that the roads are inhabited with all kinds of really shitty drivers as well. And you're driving down the road one day and you're doing your defensive driving, blah, 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 and you get hit by a fucking truck. That accident took about a fucking second. Okay, you may have been driving down the road happy-go-fucking-lucky, but the actual accident happened catastrophically fast. So if you're asking me how quickly could a liquidity crisis lead to chaos, how quickly could this, you know, implode things, how quickly could the petrodollar cease to exist? It could happen in weeks, folks. Because the bottom line is there are countries that need oil, and they're not going to wait until we get our shit together to buy the oil with dollars. And when that happens, oh boy, that'll be all it will take. And if there's 30 to 60 days of people using anything but the dollar to buy oil, the dollar is toast. It's cooked. It's gone. So Pozar thinks that QE4 is inevitable. And in fact, many people have called the recent... Sorry, I had to get up there for a second and fix my refrigerator. It had a weird hum in it, and the hum was driving me crazy. I don't know if my, you know, Zoom H4n Pro picked it up, but I know my ears were picking it up, and I didn't want to hear that hum. So I'll have to look for that hum if I'm thinking about it. I like Audacity. Separate topic. I love Audacity because it's A, it's free, and it's kind of open source, basically, and B, it works. So Audacity, if you're editing audio, it's available on Windows and Linux and probably, you know, the fucking Apple. So Audacity's pretty cool. I like it. And you say, well, I have GarageBand. Well, okay, you have money. I live in Little Saigon, baby. There ain't no repo market for the hobos of Little Saigon, you fuck. Except for the repossession of your heart. Or the repurchase agreement between a hooker and his John son. Anyways, so basically Pozar is saying this. If the repo rates spike, A, that's bad. If the FX markets dry up of dollars, which means there's no money, there's no bank reserves to fucking supply dollars to the foreign exchange markets, that's really bad. And in general, what we're talking about is the whole liquidity crisis. Liquidity is a fancy word for saying money that's there to be used. If the money's not there to be used, nothing happens. And the funny thing is, banks do create. They bring into existence. They bring into existence, you know, in a sense, the way that fiat works. They bring into existence a lot of money, folks. You know, we can get into debates about Dodd-Frank and, oh, is it true that banks have, you know, at least 10% or 20% in available cash and fucking stress tests. Okay, listen, the stress tests were bullshit. The stress tests of Timothy Geithner back in 2012 were total fucking bullshit, okay? I'm going to tell you this again. They were bullshit. They were about as real as any of the other government bullshit occurs. And you know, folks, I could tell you stories about when I was in the Army, but I'm telling you right now, if you think that government institutions are naturally honest when it comes to things important, I can tell you from my own experience, when it came to the defense of the Korean Peninsula, they weren't. So why the fuck would they be when it comes to banks? Okay? If a war game involving the defense of tens of millions of people or preventing a war is something that's treated like a fucking joke, I would say the banking system is probably treated like a fucking joke too. That's my simple observation, anecdotally speaking, from one former crocodile man to all the people out there in outer space. So yeah, liquidity is important because it does mean, at the end of the day, folks, it does ultimately mean you've got food in the grocery store. And I know I keep hammering on that. I bring up the issue of food, water, and shelter a lot. It's not just an obsession because I worry, hey, what if I end up homeless? It's an obsession because it is a crystal clear reality to me that Americans have completely ignored what's important for too long. And it's not just about value systems and stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. Although you could argue it's about the ultimate value system. Do you value your life? Do you value your own life? Do you value the lives of others? And do you have a means to survive? Anyways, the reality is this, the black hole that currently exists in the world, and this is, you could call this the world liability hole, whatever you want to call it, the infinite black hole that currently exists, the huge black hole, if you include private debt, government debt, all the corporate debt, all the junk bonds, all the derivatives, everything we call a liability at this point because somebody has to pay, anything that has counterparty risk at this point, okay, which is pretty much everything. That number is somewhere between worldwide. If it's one giant black hole, that number, its density, is somewhere between 1 quadrillion, which is $1,000 trillion, and 4 quadrillion. Now, a lot of that is shadow banking, which Pozar is an expert in. And guess what, folks? If a shadow banking expert is telling you that under the surface things look ugly, it is a reason to fucking, you know, take a double take for the simple fact that the shadow banking system is what's used to keep things liquid in a lot of cases, okay? Holy fuck, don't get me started on fucking HSBC and drug dealers, okay? A lot of the money that became available in 2009 and 2010 that became magically available, a lot of that was heroin money. A lot of that was cocaine money. Oh, I'm sorry. A lot of that was related to people that lost their heads in northern Mexico. So fucking sorry for explaining these inconvenient facts. A lot of that magical money that HSBC and Bank of America had access to was basically funding, yeah, the illegal activities, if you believe that, you know, our government cares, of making sure that heroin grown in Afghanistan made it back to the streets so soldiers, when they got done serving in Afghanistan, could shoot up and die. So shadow banking is the black market, if you want to think of it that way, of the banks. And it's not just in China, folks. It's everywhere. It's just that in the United States of America, we got more lawyers and more accountants, aka, what did I once call an accountant? A mathematical lawyer? We've got lawyers and we have mathematical lawyers. We have people in this country that can convince you, if you give them enough time, that 2 + 2 = 8, because there's a tiny little differential called the mutual acceptance of the growth of common debt. Holy fuck, I'm gonna convince you that derivatives are real because I can sell you a house, and then I can sell the risk of selling that house to you, and then I can sell the risk of giving a loan so you can buy the fucking house. Whoa, I tripled, quadrupled, blah-bloopled my money. That is derivatives. It's bullshit. It's betting. It's empty air. It's unicorn farts. So if the question you're going to ask is, how big is the black hole? It is somewhere between $1,000 trillion and $4,000 trillion in today's dollars. I don't know how big it is. I don't think anybody knows. That's A. All we can do is make guesses. Like, they'll say government debt worldwide is only around $300 trillion. Oh, eh. What are the unfunded liabilities? Oh, that might be 10 times as much. Okay, well, guess what? All of a sudden, that $300 trillion, yeah, it becomes, you know, 3 quadrillion. And guess what, folks? A lot of the fucking paper, and I call it paper, but it's really just unicorn farts. A lot of the paper that your pension funds are holding on to, yeah, I'm sorry, it's probably worthless fucking paper. CalPERS, the California fucking pension fund system, CalPERS is probably one of the biggest, I think, in what's coming. CalPERS will be like AIG, potentially worse, probably 1,000 times worse, but it'll only be one thing. I mean, folks, what's about to occur probably, if Pozar is right, is going to happen so rapidly that you'll either notice it immediately or you won't. Let me explain what I mean by that. If Pozar is right, then in reality, as so many zero hedgers have mentioned, the repo market has become essentially quantitative easing, which means right now the Fed is using the repo market and its forms of manipulation to maintain liquidity. Okay, no TARP 1, no TARP 2, no QE 1 through Z. All you have to do is juice up the repo market. And I think that's basically true. Like, I read an article on, Washington Post. I read an article from WaPo about this tonight. And the author, who believes this isn't that big a deal, but we need to do something, his solution is, why don't you extend the dates on these repo vehicles? Essentially, make the redeemable date or the payment date or the end date, the termination date, longer into the future. So in essence, he's saying, why don't we turn the repo market into a push-button quantitative easing? That's essentially what some people are calling for, folks. Turn the repo market into push-button quantitative easing. If that happens, and it may have already happened, folks, this is the funny thing, that decision may have already been made. I told you guys a year ago that Powell was going to stop raising rates, and I also said he would start QE by the end of the year. Well, I was kind of wrong, and I think I was kind of right. He is doing QE. He's just doing backdoor QE, or what in Little Saigon we call a little love tub on the sideways. A little love tub, you know, where you stick in the rod into the hole zone, but it's a little disjunctive. Yeah, he's doing QE. He's just doing it through the back door. You know, he's a backdoor man. That being said, folks, okay, it's about liquidity and you can do it. So what is the outcome? Well, here's the outcome. If they have already made the decision to turn the repo market into what I would call push button QE, then in theory, they have dodged a bullet, which means through the end of the year, you should expect a lot of banks to go to the trough, to cool things off. They'll cover some bad bets in China. They'll cover some poor man's futures contracts involving soybeans. They will cover whatever fucking liabilities that they used to consider assets. Oops. You know how quickly, just as a side topic, a bank's asset turns into a liability? Well, basically, ask yourself, what is the overnight rate? Because that's how quickly. It's like being hit by a truck. All of a sudden, yesterday, I have all these mortgage-backed securities. And then tomorrow, it's have, holy fuck, I have all these fucking things that are worthless, but I still have to pay. I'm still on the other side of some fucking trade involving now this worthless shit. That's fast. Folks, it could move really fast. And this in general fits with what I'm telling you about the whole, if you want to think about the great discontinuity, it's possible that the great discontinuity starts with a financial crisis, because it's possible that the financial crisis is really just another kind of symptom of something deeper, something darker. A lot of people have different opinions. Some people believe it's about peak oil, you know, and in a way, the peak oil story has been proven mostly to be correct. Shale is a disaster. Shale is a textbook example of what's called unconventional oil. And unconventional oil simply doesn't have a clearing price right now. Whether it's shale oil, whether it's the fucking tar sands in Canada, whether it's fucking drilling at 8 miles below the surface of the fucking ocean, knowing we have no way to fix a blowout. Yeah, did they ever tell you this about the deep sea drilling, that there was no conceivable way they could deal with a blowout? Wow, remember that Deep Horizon bullshit from 2010? That went down the memory hole, didn't it? But boy, do they stir up hurricanes and mix that shit periodically, you know? Anyways. Yeah, the Corexit and the shit they're doing in the Gulf to cover that shit up is so fucking toxic and dangerous and bad. There is so much toxic shit we're doing to our oceans right now. I don't want to go on to that tangent. You can ignore the whole issue of global warming. I don't care what your opinion is. The oceans are dying. Whatever the fucking reason is, you can see it with your own fucking eyes. And if you tell me, well, Dan, there's never been more shark attacks. You want to know something? I think you're misreading a symptom there, buddy. Okay? There have never been more shark attacks. The coyotes are coming into the neighborhoods. You know why? Because they're fucking hungry. Anyways. So I told you, this could be almost the whole podcast, and I was right. But I think it's important to note that, as I've stated in the past, when it comes to the Great Discontinuity, things could move so rapidly that if you're thinking you're going to get a heads up, I think you're wrong. There's a couple reasons why. Number one, the people who have power in our system, they don't want you to have any kind of a clue of what's going on. That's why things like repo markets exist. If we actually named these things in ways that ordinary people could understand them, if we called it the banker's credit card, and then we put a little number in the newspaper on page one, oh, look at the banks. They're taking out a lot of money right now. Wow, that's kind of scary. They don't want you to know. They don't want you to ask questions. They don't even want to remotely make things understandable. It's better for them to be occult and hidden and opaque and all kinds of fucking verbiage and crap and nomenclatura, and they don't want you to know. It's actually worse than Marxism in a way. In fact, I think it is Marxism. You know, a long time ago, I was, for a very short time, into that bullshit. When I, again, in my 20s, oh, the things I believed in my 20s. For about 6 months, I called myself a communist, and I read a ton of Marx, and I got to tell you something. Marx is reasonably clear at times. Almost every Marxist I read after him was just completely confused bullshit. And yeah, could I glean out what they're trying to say? Well, yes, I can. It just takes a lot of effort, and that's the thing. Whether it's Marxists or lawyers or accountants or all the above are the same, they use language to confuse the fuck out of you so that you don't even remotely understand what's going on. What I am telling you is that it's not just that things can move quickly. They're not going to give you any indication that something's wrong. They're not going to tell you that sometime in 2020, the petrodollar will cease to exist. Because again, I don't know that that's going to happen either. All I can tell you is it could happen really fast. Because even though we might, you know, have a few extra pounds that we can convert into biodiesel, a lot of countries around the world, they do not have anything, any slack at all. They need the fucking oil. So if they can't use dollars to get it, you know what they're going to do? They're going to use yuan, or they're going to use rubles, or they're just going to use gold. Yeah, they might, that, you know what? They might just use gold. Yeah, peak oil people will tell you it's peak oil. Guy McPherson will say the people that run the world know we're going to be dead in 5 years, so everything is just party, 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 fuck, fuck, fuck until everything's over. I don't know what's happening. There are people that will tell you anything. I am honestly telling you that I don't know what dark forces exist in the future. What I can tell you is that when things go sideways, they can go sideways lightning fast. The flip side of the just-in-time, connected, technological society is that it's like a giant fucking switch. It can be on or it can be off, but there is no graceful degradation, okay? There isn't like, oh, can we just go down to 70%? No. I'm sorry, did no one explain that to you, that when you bought into this financialized bullshit, it was like getting into a Pontiac GTO that was revved up to, I don't know, 2,000 RPM on a fucking treadmill? No transmission, no brakes? Get in, we'll launch you. How do I slow down? Well, here's the funny thing, you can't. You can run out of gas though, or your engine can explode. But you can't actually stop the car or slow it down. Did no one tell you this when they started issuing the credit cards, when people told you it's free money, when they said, oh yeah, flip homes, make money flipping homes? Did no one tell you that there was no way to slow down? Because there isn't. If you want to know how quickly this can happen, it can happen as quickly as a truck hitting your car on the highway from the side. That's how quickly this can happen. And let me be even more fucking specific, because I've mentioned this before, but there are people that listen, they have kids and they have family, so please fucking listen. Even if it's not the end of the world, even if it's just a currency crisis, what I'm about to describe will happen. No matter how severe the full crisis is, what I'm about to describe is going to happen, because I saw a little of it in 97 and 98, when I was stationed in Korea during what was called at the time the Asian flu. And folks, I saw a Korean economy go from gangbusters to almost nothing overnight. There wasn't a magical dial where you could slow things down. It's either running or it's stalled. I saw, you know, basically $1, I think the dollar to won ratio was 800 won to the dollar. 800 won to the dollar when I got to Korea in 97. By December of 97, it was 2,400 won to the dollar. And folks, the Asian flu, which took down long-term capital management and made that deep state fuck Jim Rickards famous for what? Being part of a foolish campaign of bullshit to crash the ruble? Yeah, folks, the Asian flu is nothing compared to the great financial crisis of 2008, and the great financial crisis is nothing to compare. These are orders of magnitude. Now, this is almost logarithmic. It is nothing compared to what's about to happen. So please listen to me. If you have kids, if you have people that depend upon you, and you have to drive to work or commute to work more than 20 miles, you need to come up with a plan to get home. Because there are going to be days, maybe more than one day, but there'll be the first day when this happens, and it will be a rude fucking awakening, buddy, when these roadways will freeze up. Because guess what? Every bozo on the road has been running their car and their life exactly the same way the Federal Reserve runs our economy. Hot, tight, and fragile. Kind of like fucking Janet Yellen. These roads will crash. These roads will be filled with cars. You will have traffic jams. Probably there will be an event so bad financially that there'll just be no fuel for a while, and you will have a traffic jam, and you might find yourself, the system could degrade so quickly that you might find yourself at work and your family's 20 miles away. My advice is you need to start thinking about this shit. Because even if it's not the end of the world, this is the kind of crap that happens in third world countries. And we're heading that way. If we're having blackouts or little fucking claymation shows on Puget Sound Energy, normalizing children to blackouts, yeah, we're kind of heading the fancy schmancy, fuzzy wuzzy artisanal path of third world. And third world countries, they have fuel shortages. Third world countries, systems just stop working. And yeah, I think you could imagine yourself in traffic jams where the traffic won't flow, where cars will be abandoned for days. That could happen. And that could happen very fucking quickly. Like, that's the kind of shit where you could go to work one morning and things are a little edgy, and yeah, there's, you know, the price at the gas station is triple, but that's okay. You're going to pay the triple. And then by afternoon, there's no gas and the cars aren't moving because just about every fucking poor motherfucker on the road is running their car the way the Federal Reserve runs our economy. Tight and fast and loose and on a bare bones. So there's nothing there. It's empty. It's a giant Potemkin village of nothing but elephant farts in a black hole. Yeah. You need to think about car repairs, folks. You know something? A lot of people are running their cars close to the limits, folks. Just like, you know, the U.S. economy. Like Yellen said, hot and tight and, ooh, yeah, Yellen. A lot of people are not repairing their cars. And here's the thing. A lot of the parts they need to repair them, yeah, some of them are made here. But here's the thing. Even if they're made in the U.S., they might be made hundreds, if not thousands of miles away. And in order for that little part you need to fix your fucking car, a lot of fucking transactions have to occur financially. No one told you this. No one told you that there's a whole bunch of financial bullshit that also enables that part to get from the just-in-time factory to your just-in-time broken-down Corolla. Sorry I'm getting kind of heated on this, but I want to leave this podcast with a message. I don't know if Zoltan Pozsar is correct or not. It is true. His first name is Zoltan. So anybody named Zoltan, you probably should listen to them just because of superstitious bullshit reasons and it sounds scary and Hungarian. But ignore him for a second. I don't think he's special. Understand that all this short-term liquidity is absolutely fucking necessary or the system stops working. And also understand there is no lower setting. There is no low gear. We don't have a low gear, folks. There is no low gear on this GTO called the U.S. economy as it's currently constructed. There is only a high gear. And it is only going to continue to run until it can't. If you want to think of what Powell is doing to the repo market, he's doing stealth QE, but he's doing it in a way that is slightly above the surface. Like, it's not totally shadow bullshit, but it is a lot of shadow bullshit. And if I'm right, he's turning it into push-button QE. So over the next 18 months, if I'm right, we're going to have these little spikes, these little repo market fiascos. And yeah, each one will probably be worse than the one before because, hey, it's a Markov process, you fuck, and what we're doing is not making the system stronger. And so, yeah, over the next 18 months, I would expect these types of crises on a periodic basis. Maybe it'll happen once a year for the next 2 years. Who knows? Maybe it is mainly related to the bulbousness of the U.S. economy. It's almost all about the fourth quarter now. You know, it's a lot like a football game you're about to lose. Almost everything about the U.S. economy is about the fourth quarter now. It's about September, October, November, December. It's about, you know, back-to-school sales and Black Friday and Christmas and Cyber Tuesdays and buy, 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 buy. Because remember, there is no third gear. There is only a fourth gear. There's no third. There's no second. And there sure as shit isn't a fucking neutral on this crazy train GTO. The engine's at 3,000 RPM. The water temperature is 280. Huh? That might not be so good. His name's Zoltan Pozsar. I don't think I have time for another topic. In fact, I feel like I should save these topics for tomorrow. Before I go, though, I need to tell you something because I'm starting to do this as a habit. I don't charge for listening to my podcast, nor do I expect to be paid. Do you understand what I just said? I don't charge you. There's no paywall. And if I'm ever kicked off of SoundCloud, I will just point people to my other website and just make the MP3 files available raw form. I think that's where things are probably headed. I think SoundCloud is probably shadow banning me a little bit right now. And I think stage two is basically, anyways, the point is I do not charge for the listening, but I would love to be self-funded, so I do ask for donations. If you don't have money, if you don't have cash, please do not pay. Don't pay with a credit card. Please don't. Just don't. Don't pay with debt. Don't pay with money you don't have. If you're listening, you're doing a lot in a way anyways, because we're sharing ideas. Maybe I'm doing all the fucking talking, but at least you're listening. And you know what? Maybe my ideas are crazy, and maybe they make you insane, but you have the courage to listen. So why would I charge you for that if you don't have the money, you fuck? Here's the deal. If you have the money, which means you've taken care of your food, your water, your shelter, and the people you love, and all of the above. If you have the money, and you have a little extra, and you want to help out, there's no obligation to do this every day or every podcast, just whenever you can. If you can help, I will accept it, because that to me is a reasonable way to get paid. If you're getting value on my podcast, and you have a few extra bucks, and you feel like it's worth your money to give me some of that money, not just your time, because when you listen, you're giving me your time, but some money, then I think that's great. I have a link to Venmo on my SoundCloud homepage, and I have a link to Venmo I will put in the description of this podcast on SoundCloud. And, you know, if Venmo doesn't work for you, I can, you know, I have an email address. We can talk about other options, but currently Venmo is the best option for most cases. But if you want to give me fucking cryptos or gold or silver or diamonds or cash, all of this is possible. But we need to talk about it by the email, and we may even have to go to encrypted email. Needless to say, I have a Venmo link, and that's all above board. That's not shadow banking. No, no, no. And here's another thing, too, folks, about deplatforming and taking away people's access to being able to fund their podcasts and YouTube channels, which is happening these days. Isn't it funny that there's so much of this know your customer bullshit and overlord bullshit applied to everyday schmucks like us? But like the WAPO writer said, we need to take the regulations against the, we need to lower regulations against the banks, you know. The banks, Dodd-Frank is too stringent. Too stringent. Yeah, basically, if you're an overlord, then why would anyone investigate you? That makes no sense. But if you're a schmuck like me, oh my God. Try to conduct financial transactions without a fucking colonoscopy these days. Try to do something as an ordinary schmuck with your money. They treat you like a fucking criminal. But if you're an actual criminal worth billions, they treat you like the fucking king of fucking England. That is the state of America and Little Saigon. So for those of us in Little Saigon, for those of us beyond the temporal range, for those of us living out the ancient rites of the warrior kings who once ruled the lands between here and the great sea, for those soldiers of the night carrying bats and chain and pillowcases filled with D-cell batteries, I salute you. I know you're going out to do some kind of bullshit. But I salute you in your bullshit, you fuck. And to all the rest of you who don't intend to form a thug army and, you know, go crazy in the night, I hope you have a great rest of your fucking evening. And remember, if someone's first name, given name at birth, is Zoltan, you better fucking listen.